RTI Podcast, getting ready for the SEC Tournament in Hoover this week. Happy to be joined by my really good friend, Chris Lee from Southeastern 14, talking college baseball. Chris, what's up, buddy?
Trey, you're a really good friend, too. You tolerate my stupidity and all sorts of things, and always happy to do your show.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. We've got a long history, so it's all good.
We have. Get those juice boxes ready.
You got the juice box. I know. A little bit of an inside joke on that one. Hey, Chris, let's go back to the weekend. Tennessee takes care of business in Carolina, gets 2 out of 3. And then on their bus ride back from Columbia, they're sitting there watching Kentucky Vanderbilt. How do you kind of put together Tennessee's last regular season series of the year and the pressure, I guess, maybe they were feeling?
Well, look. Tennessee, I thought, was going into South Carolina at a bad time for Tennessee because I felt like Carolina's pitching has been really good. I felt like Carolina probably should have put Brett Carey in the rotation before it did. It tried it last weekend. It worked exceptionally well. And I think he changed the complexion of that rotation, which I thought was already good, and I thought that made it great. So I thought for Tennessee, going into Carolina at a time where Carolina had started to get some confidence – and was really putting a great rotation out there, was terrible timing. You throw in the pressure of basically a pennant race in college baseball terms. I thought things were set up very poorly for Tennessee. For Tennessee to go and win that series, did it need a little bit of a break? Sure it did. But here's the thing. When you're 20-10 in the SEC, you have done your part. You have set yourself up for good things. And so kudos to Tennessee for taking advantage of that. I thought that really said a lot about that team to go into South Carolina and win the series under those circumstances.
Chris, what is it about, before we get to the pitching, what is it about Tennessee's offense that makes other teams worry? Because, I mean, you've talked about this hundreds of times this year during the season. Tennessee goes off in spurts, it feels like. They'll grab one in the second inning, and then all of a sudden the fourth or the fifth or the sixth, they're putting up 5 runs. And so they're building up that lead, and, you know, they're relying on that pitching. What is it about Tennessee's hitting that makes them dangerous, especially going in to the SEC tournament and then going into regionals and super regionals?
Well, I think there's a bunch of stuff, Trey. I mean, one thing is philosophy, okay? I think that sometimes teams take on the personnel of their head coach, and Tony Vitello is a pedal-to-the-floor guy. You see it sometimes with base running, with aggressive hitting. I think Tennessee, when it has it going, it makes that work. Number two, I think that you look at the top of the lineup, they've got an all-SEC guy. In fact, two of them on the left side, their infield, and Liam Spence, who may have been the most underrated player in the league, and Jake Rucker, who was, in my opinion, the best hitter or the best third baseman in the league. So you had that. And then you look up and down the lineup. Sometimes you have teams that they start to run out of steam in their lineup around 6, 7, 8. Tennessee didn't do that. I mean, the weak link in their lineup this year was maybe Connor Pavloni, but because perhaps of the injuries, but they filled in with him in Jackson Greer, and he hit really well. Luke Lipsius is probably one of the easier guys to pitch to in that lineup in terms of who you're facing. But that's not a lock on him. That says a lot about the lineup because he's no easy out.
I think homers this past weekend.
yeah. I mean, and he didn't get on base as much. And I say that relatively speaking, but you're making my point for me that there's not an easy out in that lineup. And we have a guy on the top in Liam Spence who doesn't swing at bad pitches, who walks like there's no tomorrow, who has basically a 500-plus on-base percentage, which is incredibly rare. And that's the most important offensive stat in baseball. I just look at that lineup, and it was complete in about every way you can look at it.
Tennessee's pitching. They have not had to change up their rotation all year. And you don't see that a you see that with some
Trey, you don't see it much at all. I've seen a lot of SEC ball, and that's rare.
Right. So, you know, you're rolling with Dallas on a Friday, and you're rolling with Heflin, and then you're going with Tidwell. We'll see what it looks like this week in Hoover. I'll be interested to see how they play the pitching card. But when you look at what Tennessee has coming out of the bullpen and then what Tennessee has starting up on the mound, what did you see from them this year that stood out to you the most?
Well, and this is going to sound like a negative, but I'm going to come back around. Okay. I don't think they had star power. There's not a guy on that rotation or in that bullpen that it's probably going to be a first or second all SEC type of player. But what they do have is guys that can go deep in the games. And you won't find many teams at a power five level that has three guys that can go deep in the games the way Tennessee's can. Oh, by the way, they've got Hundley, who's a multi-inning reliever who's really good. You got some parts that you can mix and match. I think McLaughlin and Cannell, and they've got a lot of guys who can throw a couple innings. I think that what is underrated in college baseball is going deep in the games. Tennessee, does it have a lot of guys who you say these guys are going to go eight and give up no runs or zero runs? No. But what they have is a lot of guys that can give you five, six, seven innings on a week in and week out basis. And Trey, when your team hits like that team hits, six innings and three runs is usually going to be plenty good on both nights. I just feel like this was a staff that did what it needed to do, and it's got durability. And a lot of times that goes a long way in postseason. And, oh, by the way, if Tennessee were to get to Omaha, I think Chad Dallas's guy is going to be a much better pitcher there than he is at Lindsey Nelson, where the ball gets out a lot. Look at the strikeout to walk ratio. I think it was about six. Look at the home runs. That's where he had trouble, Trey. He gave up 13 of them. Well, the ball does not get out in Omaha nearly as much. I think it is the most stingy home run park in the country for college baseball, literally the number one stingiest home run park in the country. So to me, Chad Dallas is a guy that if Tennessee gets to Omaha, he's a lot more valuable because probably the balls that are getting out at home aren't going to get out there. He doesn't put a lot of guys on base by hitting and walks. And I think that turns into a really, really rare and valuable commodity in that venue.
Before I switch over to Tony Vitello and talk about that, how do you summarize the SEC this year? I mean, getting to see Arkansas up close, getting to see, Cobb pitch is, it was pretty cool. And then getting to see what Vanderbilt has with their starting pitchers with Rocker, Leiter, it just felt like there was so much talent in the conference this year. It was almost overwhelming a little bit because there's so many ranked teams from the Southeastern Conference in the top 25. I mean, how would you kind of, if we had to wrap up the SEC regular season, how would you kind of put that into words, what certain schools did and maybe if certain schools kind of let off to what we thought they would do?
Well, I there's three things I'm thinking of, and we could write a book about this, but I'll leave it to you really simple. Okay. Before the season, there were 11, perhaps 12 teams thought of as regional teams, right? And I looked at that and said, the sum of wins and losses in the league is never going to change. And so you knew somebody was going to end up at season's end that was saying, hey, we underachieved. That just was going to happen by definition. Well, look at who they were. One of them is LSU, which is a top five program in the country. I went 13-17. The other is Texas A&M, which fired its coach. And by the way, A&M had the third longest streak of NCAA tournament appearances, one behind Vandy and a lot behind Florida State, who's lapped everybody. But that says a lot where a team that's in the tournament every year doesn't come close. That was bound to happen to somebody, and A&M just got the unlucky spin of the wheel, or however you want to put it. Number two, I think this says more than anything, Trey, Florida was your preseason number one team this year. But yet, midway through the season, you had that week or two where there were the top five teams in the country were all from the SEC. And oh, by the way, none of them were Florida. That speaks volumes. And you look at who they were. It was Arkansas, which is still number one. Vanderbilt, which is, in that top five range, two, three, right. Four. We know about Tennessee. We know about Mississippi State. It's been consistent top five most of the year. And by the way, the other one was Ole Miss, which I think is probably a top five or 16 if it's got Gunnar Hoglund, their star starting pitcher, who it doesn't have now. So I think you look at it, you don't just say, because sometimes we look back on the polls and we say that team wasn't nearly as good as we thought. I don't think that was the case for the SEC. And I think that just that little figure right there with all the teams in the top five. And oh, by the way, there's Florida, or whatever you do with them, that just says everything. And number three, just wait a month or two till the MLB draft and see how many kids of this league are picked. How many of its commitments get picked near the top. And I think if you have any doubts about what kind of league this is, that's going to reinforce your the thought that maybe those doubts are not well placed.
You got that right. No, I completely agree. And it was crazy. It was even crazy how Tennessee ended up winning the East. And I do think I think it's neat how they did it for the first time since 1997. I think that Vanderbilt would probably love to have that game, that choice to play that game on Saturday and not have it canceled on Sunday against Alabama. But I think that when you look at the state of Tennessee baseball, before we get to what's going on in Hoover this week, for Tony Vitello, and you've been covering this sport for a very, very long time, for Tony Vitello to take over 4 years ago and to not have a season last year, and then to come out this season and you're ranked top five, top eight most of the season. I mean, there wasn't much of a drop-off. You know, you started getting in there midway from the top 10, and then you kind of set yourself into that spot. What does it say for what Tony Vitello's done at Tennessee and the players that he's recruiting?
I'm glad you set the table with 2020, because let's go back there a minute. Okay, 2019, they get to regional for the first time since, what, 05? And competed really well there, by the way. So that was step number one. Number two should have been last year, right? Because they're cruising along before the season gets canceled. And then I look at what happened after the year, right? They get their top pitcher, Garrett Crochet, taken. He makes the White Sox just like that. And is pitching big league innings. That right there is a huge blow. But they also lost Alex Solari, who's one of the best three or four hitters in the league last year, I think. That was a big loss. And then the other outfielder who got drafted, whose name escapes me, that, you know, he kind of popped up and you know, before we even got to know him across the league, he's gone. So if I'm Tennessee, I'm looking at it this way, okay? You just had some momentum and maybe you were poised to do some other things in 2020 and it gets snapped out in front of you just like that. Right. That's hard to recover from. To come back and take the next step the way he did in a year where you knew the league was going to be brutally tough at the top, you know, don't even bother to get into how he did it and everything. That's impressive in its own right. Just the fact that he did that against that backdrop to me was incredible.
Okay, so what do they have to do now? Because, Chris, there's an opening in College Station, mm-hmm. which could be a trickle effect, because maybe they go after TCU's coach, TCU takes A&M, TCU comes open. Or maybe A&M decides, okay, I'm going to call up Tony. You know, I don't know if he'll talk to me right now, but I'm going to call him up, see what kind of interest, or talk to an agent, which is CAA, if I'm not mistaken, which is good old Jimmy Sexton. Or do they, you know, LSU could open up here. What does Tennessee have to do? And I know it's stadium. Okay. I know it's stadium, and giving more money. Here's another key little fact. When Tony Vitello signed his pandemic agreement back in November, I added up the numbers. That took away, when he signed that took away his incentives. He was not going to receive incentives this year. Mm. That took away $252,000 that he could have made off incentives. By not even making it to Omaha, he was in that range of making about $220,000. So when you look at what Tennessee has to do, and new athletic director Danny White, who's walking into a situation where he's trying to handle football, but then all of a sudden, wait a minute, baseball is at the forefront in the middle of May. What happens now, Chris? You've been in this game for a long time. How are they going to come after these coaches? What's the next step when it comes to getting a contract? And also knowing that he's going to get the facilities that he's promised.
Yeah, well, I mean, what the easy thing is writing the check, right? That's something that you would hope Tennessee does. Number two, the facilities, and I'm sure they know what he wants. I think if I'm Tennessee, I'm striking while the iron is hot. I'm calling your Todd Heltons, your Chris Burks, your guys that are prominent alums and want to see baseball win. And I don't know all the names like you would, but you know they're out there. And just seeing, what do we have to do to make this successful long-term? Now, having said that, Trey, Tennessee can do its part. You just never know. You don't know. I mean, a job that you and I might take or might not take maybe has appealed to Tony Vitello in different ways. Now, look, one thing, and maybe this works against Tennessee a little bit. Sometimes coaches don't want to move families. I think, as I understand, he's single. I'm guessing there's no kids in the picture. So that's a thing that probably makes it a little bit easier for him to go. And I'm not trying to be negative towards Tennessee here, but that's one thing sometimes sense. Coaches yeah. don't want to uproot family. So that might be one thing to concern. You just don't know what appeals to somebody, to some coach. And I don't know Tony Vitello like you do. To some coaches, staying and building something in a place where it hasn't been built. Well, you can't say that for Tennessee because it has been built. It's just been so long that most of the fan base doesn't know what that's like.
Right.
And I would say that's one thing in Tennessee's back pocket is you could say if you're Tennessee, hey, look, we can win here. We won here without you before, so we can carry this forward. But you just never know. Everybody's different, right? I mean, I think one reason Vanderbilt kept Tim Corbin, I think Corbin kind of liked the idea of winning a place where they hadn't won before. And if you go, and let's face it, Tennessee fans, if you keep Vitello this year, this is going to be the thing that churns stomachs for years to come. And Vanderbilt went through it. LSU would come open and Tim Corbin would look at it and Texas would come open and that would be another one. Mississippi State, like you're going to go through this even if you keep Tony Vitello. This is going to keep happening year after year after year. That's just the price that you pay for success. And so you just, part of it is you just kind of hope that in the day your effort is good enough. You know, and Oregon was one that to Tim Corbin was very appealing because Oregon did not have a program at the time. And they said they actually – the way I approached him was pretty coy. They said, hey, Tim, we need to know how to build a program. What would you do? Can you give us some advice? And oh, by the way, how would you like to be our coach? And so that was a little crafty in the way that it approached it. But my point is, I think the Oregon program, that job had some appeal to him because it was a build it from scratch. You never know what does it for individual coaches. So I don't know if Tony Vitello, if he says, hey, I like it here at Tennessee. We're showing we can compete in the SEC, and I like building something from nothing, whether it's going to an LSU or an Arkansas, which will probably come open in a few years, and doing what's been done before. I don't know what each individual wants, but I will tell you this, even if Tennessee keeps Tony Vitello, if they keep winning, and I think they will, this is going to keep happening. And so buckle up because the ride often for fans in the offseason could be a really anxious one.
Well, it almost feels like something to Tennessee went through it a couple of years ago with Rick Barnes, where Barnes was flirting with UCLA, and it took Tennessee boosters coming in and paying a nice chunk of his salary to keep him in Knoxville. So I'm interested to see what boosters step up, and he has been talking to them. There's two or three of them, big money donors, that he's been talking to about stadium renovations, about what they can do. Last thing on Tennessee, when it comes to facilities, man, I lived in Nashville for 7 years. I've been over to the Hawk. I have seen facilities across the SEC. Tennessee tries to keep recruits from coming in the front door because it just looks like this stone palace. I'm wondering your take of, because you've seen it with what they've done at Nashville and you've seen it, what they've done at Ole Miss and Mississippi State. How big a deal is it money-wise for a school to go out and try to invest? Florida just built a $65 million baseball stadium. How big of a deal is it for them to go out and try to take something out, you know, and pay for it when it comes to futures or have it down that road when it comes to new baseball stadiums? Because Tennessee, they're going to have a hard time competing with other teams knowing that they've got this ugly-looking stadium from the outside. It's beautiful inside, but just kind of ugly on the outside. How much is that a big deal when it comes to recruiting?
Well, I think it is a big deal. Obviously, it's not stopped them from having some success, but the question is, can you sustain it? And especially when you've got Vanderbilt in your backyard, which is the biggest brand in college baseball. And look, Vanderbilt's gotten kids from Knoxville.
Yep.
Parker Nolan is a Knoxville kid who starts for them. So it's going to be tough, but you know, I will say this, the numbers aren't nearly as big. The numbers for baseball are not nearly as big as they are for football. Now the revenues aren't either. And that's right. The complication, but you know, I will say this, if you want to look at it from a positive standpoint, if you fix that And it's been a while since I've been to Knoxville for a baseball game. But one of the things that's always struck me, Trey, is once you get in there, the backdrop is beautiful with the trees and everything and the atmosphere around the park. I mean, it is one of those things that, like, if you fix that part, the rest of it's really nice. The support is starting to come. You know, I think obviously you said it in your question, it's got to be fixed. But again, I think the numbers are a lot more manageable. And you would hope from Tennessee's standpoint, the commitment is there from boosters to write those checks.
A couple more questions. We're getting into, I want to save a tricky one for the last one when it comes to scholarships. The SEC tournament starting up this week in Hoover, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of craziness with 8:30 games in the morning. And, you know, they're playing till 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. You know, double elimination starts on Wednesday, and then it drops off to single elimination later in the week, you know, later in the week towards the weekend. How much are you looking forward to the SEC tournament? But also, how big is this for a lot of people like to say, and this is what I've heard over the last couple of days, Tennessee doesn't need to go down there and waste their pitching. If they lose that first game, get out, where you're not wasting anything else before a regional comes in. But we all see it. We all see the craziness of LSU fans, of Mississippi State fans, everybody just flocking to Hoover. What are you most excited about this week when it comes to the tournament, besides being able to go back? And then also, who are maybe one or two teams that you're looking at and thinking, maybe this team gets hot down in Hoover?
Well, I just like going because you realize how much talent is there, right? And baseball this time of the year, look, if you watch, I always tell people, if you've not watched a lot of college baseball, don't watch it in February and March. Teams are just getting used to stuff. You're seeing teams kick balls all over the infield. By the time they get down to Hoover, everybody's done with school, Trey. Everybody's been in the groove for 3 or 4 months, and the quality of ball is terrific. And good baseball is just so much fun to watch. I think I just get excited going down there and seeing how much talent there is. You know, the thing about pitching, look, every fan base at every school that is already in the tournament or especially in position to host is saying the same thing. Just go down there and don't get your guys hurt. But guess what? Coaches and players want to win. And when you get down there, the competitive juices kick in and you're in a one-run game in the ninth, and hey, why not, right? I think you got to be careful about how you manage your pitching and not doing anything stupid. And maybe say if this guy's 80 or 90 pitches, yeah, the reliever we might put in after him might lose us the game, but we need to keep this guy fresh for the regional. That's the balancing act you play. You want to win the games because winning is fun. Fans like winning, coaches like winning, players like winning, but you don't want to sabotage yourself for next week. And I think that's the balancing act that not just Tennessee, but 7 or 8 schools in that tournament are going to be doing.
There's been talk over the last couple of days, and it's been going on for years, but last couple of days, there's a documentary that's been released about the scholarship limits in the NCAA. And Matt Wyatt, I think, is the one that put that thing together in talking about the 11.7 and how big a deal that is. And then, you know, they put focus on Vanderbilt because they, to some people's eyes, they do have an advantage. I think the state of Tennessee kind of plays into that just a little bit, but also I think Vanderbilt has such an endowment that it has the ability to help out when it comes to avenues like this with scholarships. Talk to me about the 11.7, if people don't quite understand that, and how teams like Vanderbilt maybe are taking advantage of the situation, but can you really blame them?
Well, first of all, anybody would do the same thing that Vanderbilt's doing. There's nothing illegal about it. Let me just give you some background, and it hits on several different areas. I'll try to make this as quick as I can. Everybody knows SEC teams get 11.7 baseball scholarships, but that doesn't stop schools from kicking in. If, say, for Tennessee's recruiting a kid in state and he qualifies for the lottery scholarship, well, guess what? He gets that. And so you have a layer of advantage built in at Tennessee and Vanderbilt that you don't – well, Vanderbilt recruits mostly out of state. But let's keep it with Tennessee for a minute. Let's say Alabama and Auburn don't have because their kids don't get that. So you have tiers within the league. Now, Vanderbilt in some ways takes it to a different tier because what Vanderbilt does is it uses a system called Opportunity Vanderbilt, in which the school said – and it did this about 12, 15 years ago – it got enough donors together, and look, Vanderbilt's got billionaire donors. And they said, you know what? School's expensive. We want to find out, like, every time we have a kid who comes in and fills out the federal paperwork, let's make it sure that kids here who can't afford it get every dollar covered in scholarships and grants that the school underwrites. So the school's got this endowment that's worth, you know, billions of dollars or whatever, and the interest pays for that. So it's something any school can do. Now, do most schools have Vanderbilt's endowment? No, most schools do not, especially in the SEC, where you're dealing with public schools. So Vanderbilt's not doing anything that is illegal, but most schools do not have advantage to that pool of money. Now, here's the thing that doesn't get talked about. We look at it in terms of scholarship dollars given. Do you know what it costs to go to Vanderbilt next year?
I'm going to say $70,000 a year.
$83,000. So let's say you get a $40,000 scholarship through baseball and whatever. You still got $43,000 to pay out of pocket, which is a little problematic for most of us, I would say. So there's that. So if you flip it and look at it the other way, even with all the money Vanderbilt is giving kids, I would bet you that there's no school in the conference whose players pay more out of pocket than Vanderbilt. I'll give you an example. And I won't name the name, but there was a certain star player on Vanderbilt's 2019 team whose parents were fairly well off. And this kid had, from my understanding, free rides at multiple other SEC schools. The kid wanted to play at Vanderbilt. Mom and dad could afford it. So he played at Vanderbilt and did very well. And again, was a big role player. But my understanding was the kid turned down free rides at multiple other schools and was paying about $50,000 out of pocket at Vanderbilt. Now, look, most people's parents don't have that kind of money, but some do. And I think that's where Vanderbilt just uses those situations. It finds kids. I'm going to guess Jack Leiter, whose dad is Al Leiter, who's worth a lot of money. I'm going to guess Jack Leiter is getting a minimal scholarship or maybe not any at all. But mom and dad can afford to pay for it. Now, what they do is they'll find some kids who aren't well off, and those kids will get a baseball scholarship and also get a good bit of aid from the school, and maybe that kid's going for free. So I would say that it's probably not the advantage that a lot of people think it is if you start looking at how much they're paying out of pocket, but certainly the brand of Vanderbilt and the fact that you can get an education that certainly has an appeal, I think, more than any other in of any school in the league. No disrespect to any of the other schools because they're all good institutions, but Vanderbilt's the one that when you think of academics is the one that pops. So that's kind of how it works. I wish the NCAA would give more scholarships for baseball and kind of take this off the table, but those are the rules and that's kind of how Vanderbilt plays it.
It's interesting. You know, another thing that's going to be interesting, Chris, is how the name, image, and likeness deal kind of affects how much money these players can make, because what a lot of people don't understand is these kids can go home. They can get paid $1,000, $2,000 to run a camp for a couple days. They can do sponsorship deals through, you know, apparel companies, bag companies, Instagrams. The more profile you have, the more money you're going to be able to make. And I think that's what I'm very interested to see how this is going to change, you know, what these players' income looks like altogether. I'm not talking about scholarships, but I'm talking about income and the pay to, you know, paying players to be a part of it. So it'll be interesting. Chris, can't wait to see you down in Hoover, man. What's going on with the Southeastern 14, man?
A lot is going on with the Southeastern 14. If you ever want to make enemies, try picking an all-SEC team. You make everybody upset that way. But
Tennessee fans happy.
Well, good. I'm glad somebody's happy. I was getting an earful from some fan bases. But, we picked it's a great league. There's a lot of good players. We did something nobody else did. We picked four all-SEC teams. Each has positions, all nine positions in the field covered, has three starting pitchers, two relievers, and a DH who isn't always a DH. But there's so many good players in the league. I spent a lot of time on it. I didn't leave any stones unturned. I didn't forget about your favorite player who didn't make it. I just weighed them all against each other. And there's so many great players that there's only so much room. But we did that. We picked a player and coach and rookie of the year in the league. You can find that all at southeastern14.com. I'll be down in Hoover from Thursday at least through Saturday night. We'll have some takeaways from the games. It won't just be game stories. You can watch the game and figure out what happened. But I'll tell you what it meant. And so we'll have you covered from Hoover. We do a podcast, Trey, 5 days a week. I'm about to do one with Olin Buchanan in a minute. We're going to talk about the Rob Childers situation and who A&M may be targeting. It is an SEC podcast, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. Are we going to talk football? Absolutely. But you know what? Basketball and baseball are undercovered in this league. They deserve a lot of attention. We give them that. I think if you're the SEC fan looking for depth of story and some intelligent talk, you'll love our podcast.
Keep up the great work, brother. You know, I love it, man. And thanks for so much for coming on. And can't wait to see you down at Hoover. Bring my juice boxes and we'll have ourselves a party, brother.
Absolutely. Everybody be safe. Headed down to Hoover. Enjoy your time there.
That's Chris Lee with Southeastern 14. I'm Trey Wallace with the Rocky Top Insider Podcast. We'll see you down at Hoover.